Before we begin, I represent the appellant. I've provided the panel and the appellee with some demonstrative exhibits for reference. May it please the court, my name is Nina Kazazian. I represent the appellant in this action, NHK Investments, LLC. I will cover three issues today. The first being the district court's denial of appellant's bill of costs, and the second being the affirmation of the receiver costs, and the third being the court's decision to dismiss the action really without any proceedings at all. On the first issue, this issue simply requires this panel to apply its decision in Strunk v. Goldberg. The application of CRS 13-17-202, as indicated in the demonstrative exhibits, show that on three separate occasions, appellant provided to the appellees offers of settlement within the meaning of that statute. The purpose of the statute, as this panel is well aware, is to provide an incentive to the parties to settle early. This case is an extreme example of how that would have benefited the courts and the parties. The case arises out of a claim by the HOA against the owner of the property, NHK Investments, for $1,066. A lien was filed and requesting $2,600. An action was filed by the appellee in county court in the beginning of March 2012, almost immediately after receiving notice of the lawsuit. Appellant tendered an offer of settlement to appellee to pay the amounts that were due and owing in exchange for dismissal of the action. That offer was rejected. Appellant tried again on...
Counsel, let me stop you there. I'm only aware of one offer of settlement at issue in this appeal. You're mentioning multiple ones?
Your Honor, there is one offer of settlement that is so delineated in a caption. But under the statute clearly states that an offer of settlement does not need to carry a particular form.
Well, let me stop you there, Counsel, so we can save some time here.
Okay.
Are those other supposed offers of settlement part of the record?
Yes, they are, Your Honor.
Okay. Were they at all argued in either of these briefs? Because I don't see it anywhere.
Your Honor, I believe they were alluded to in the briefs as the offers of settlement, offers that had taken place as part of the history of the case. I will focus my attention on the third, but I wanted the court to be aware that in the record is, in particular, the second offer dated April 21st, which constitutes a letter and a check, which was returned by the appellee. Those facts are not disputed. The third offer was made again on May 2nd, 2012. The appellant made an offer of settlement to pay the amounts that were recoverable under the statutory lien, and that offer was rejected within 2 days. Appellees argue that the lower court found in error, I submit, that the third offer contained non-monetary terms that take it out of the scope of the statute. I respectfully submit to your honors that under the language of Strunk v. Goldberg, the type of non-monetary term that would take the offer out of the statute, scope of the statute, does not appear in this case. In Strunk v. Goldberg, the court determined that non-monetary conditions which extend the scope of the offer beyond the claims at issue are contrary to the purposes of Section 13-17-202. No such conditions appear in the offer of settlement in this appeal. Like the fact pattern in Scrumpy Goldberg, the offer of settlement here simply addressed issues that addressed the resolution that would take place upon termination of the action. For those reasons, I submit to your honors that the court, lower court erred as a matter of application of the statute when it found that non-monetary terms were included in the statutory offer.
Was any offer of settlement served on Western States or Mills?
Your honors, I don't believe that they were, and that raises a separate issue with respect to I don't believe they were separately served on. It has to do with the offer of settlement against the claims raised by the Atrium. Now, just to clarify, the district court, in essence, this case involved two actions. The first was initiated by, the claims that were initiated by the association against the owner of the property appellant. Those claims, it is also undisputed, were dismissed without a resolution, voluntarily, by the appellee. Appellee did not recover anything. The order that is part of the demand.
How much did the mortgage company pay to the association?
The mortgage company paid just shy of $20,000 without a determination of any reasonableness of attorney's fees or costs.
Okay, so the...
Or judgment.
So the association recovered $20,000.
That's true, of which it is my understanding that approximately $18,000 went, $15,000 went to pay the attorneys. And again, Your Honors, this is a case that was $1,066 case, and it should have been settled very early in the litigation. As soon as the appellant found out that the HOA dues had not gone out of the bank and that there were monies owed, the appellant immediately attempted to resolve that debt. And it was, I submit to Your Honors, that in this case, the offer of settlement statute should be applied because this is exactly the type of case that that the courts and the legislature want to encourage to be settled and resolved without protracted litigation. Ultimately, that's what happened here, is the protracted litigation. So this case could have and should have been settled for $2,000 before a receiver was put in place and before any costs were incurred by the association. I submit to Your Honors that it was the it was inappropriate under the principles of the offer of settlement statute for the offers to be rejected. Secondly,
didn't you condition payment upon the prior release of the lien as opposed to a simultaneous tender and release? And if that's the case, and I'm reading from this letter you just provided us, if you did that, isn't that just simply a non-conforming offer under the statute?
Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that it is not non-conforming because release of the lien is part and parcel of the claims and the action. And in Strunke v. Goldberg, the court really specified that when there are issues that are attempted to be resolved by an offer of settlement, future claims, other issues that are not part and parcel of the litigation, that may take it outside the
scope. But that's not what I'm addressing. What I'm addressing is, why should they have to dismiss the lien before you paid them?
Well, Your Honor, I believe you're looking at the March 15th letter, and if you look ahead to the April 21st letter, the check was provided simultaneous with the letter. They had the payment at the same time. So if the court determines that the March 15th offer was not satisfactory, I would encourage the court to look at the March or the April 21st tender as well as the May 2nd. I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal, so I will... I'd like to continue on with respect to the receiver costs on the at issue here. Oh, and also the fact that the appellee did not receive any determination at the end in its favor, in addition to providing...
Which appellee are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Atrium Condominiums. I apologize, Your Honor. Thank you for the opportunity to clarify. Under Kiowa, because the action was brought to enforce the terms of the declarations to obtain HOA dues, with respect to the Atrium's claims against the appellant was the prevailing party. The lower court, the district court, erred in determining that there was no the appellant did not prevail on the claims that the Atrium brought against it. The Atrium voluntarily dismissed those claims without any findings of fact or determination of reasonableness of costs, and under Kiowa, as well as the offer of settlement statute, the bill of costs and attorney's fees should have been granted to the appellant. The receiver costs similarly should not have been approved, not only because there were indicia of dishonesty in the district court hearing that was held on a limited number of issues, but also because all of the receivership costs were incurred after the second and third offers of settlement were tendered and rejected. Finally, with respect to the appellant's claims against the appellee, I would submit to Your Honors that the proceedings in the district court were highly irregular and did not comply with the rules of civil procedure. A stay was entered, no discovery was ever allowed, no dispositive pleadings were allowed in terms of summary judgment, and the court should not have made a determination without allowing the case to proceed through discovery. For these reasons, I ask the court to reverse the final order of the district court with instructions to award the appellant the bill of costs and attorney's fees for the costs and fees incurred in the action from April 21st, 2012, with pre-judgment and post-judgment interest, and to also reverse the approval of the receiver costs and permit the appellant's claims against the appellee Western States to go forward. And I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Andrew Gibbs. I'm counsel for the Atrium Appellee. I'll be splitting my time with counsel for Phil Mills and Western States, so I hope to keep this pretty brief. Bottom line is her appeal is based on one statutory offer, which is under 1317.202, with very strict requirements for how that offer is to be made. In this particular case, instead of a 14-day time frame, it was a 5-day time frame. Offer was issued on May 2nd. She acquired a response by May 7th. There was a number of non-monetary components to it, that they permit an inspection of the unit, that they rekey the locks, they return to possession controlled defendant at their sole expense, and they release away of any claim, and so on and so forth. It was impossible for the association to respond to that offer, it was impossible to fast forward and say, hey, look, this has been, she achieved more in litigation because of the non-monetary components. There are too many non-monetary components to it, instead of just a simple number that she could have either gotten below or above. However, there was no determination on the merits at any time.
Excuse me, counsel, when the offer was made, mm-hmm. was there a dispute as to the dollar amount? Did you folks dispute the dollar amount that was offered?
The dollar amount that was offered was only for the principal amount. That dollar amount did not include any of the attorney's fees and costs, and that's why the offer was not accepted.
Which of the conditions in the offer of settlement do you think are inconsistent with the concept that everyone's going to walk away from this happy? Which of those conditions are inconsistent with that general concept?
As far as walking away happy...
Or maybe not happy, but at least
Well, I guess the components of inspecting the unit, rekeying the unit, returning it to her possession, that was very difficult because we're in the process of a receivership where they're shopping for tenants to get in there. So they're going to have to then potentially break a lease or stop that process to put her back into it while still not being fully compensated for what they spent to start this action, i.e. they had spent attorney's fees and costs to start the receivership to recover from NHK.
And was there a tenant in there at the time?
Not yet.
But there was a signed lease?
They were working towards it. In fact, I don't believe a lease was signed until June. When the mortgage company reached out to General Counsel Association under the Kiowa Statute 38.33.3.316 subsection 8 to ask for the amount that was due, the association's counsel provided that. The reason it was $15,000 is because NHK was being extremely contentious. There was a bevy of motions, and it was a very protracted level of correspondence by the time it got to July when that happened. So the association, pursuant to that statute, submitted what was owed, the mortgage company paid it, and in each case, the half, it voluntarily dismissed that claim. But if you move on to the receiver component, part of her brief talks about there not being a chance to have an evidentiary hearing or explore the evidence of the cost of the receiver. That's not true. There was a long 6-hour hearing that went through a lot of detail and a lot of witnesses about the expenses incurred by that receiver and why those expenses were incurred. The judge ultimately backed out $661 in order to release that from the bond. In the meantime, the only claims after the association dismissed its receivership action from receiving payment were NHK's counterclaims. There are a whole series of them regarding bed bugs and a variety of things in the building. Those were all dismissed. So when everything came out, all the substantive claims were gone. The only matter at issue was the cost of the receiver, which was addressed by the local court. There was no prevailing party. There was no decision on the merits. Everything was simply dismissed. If there was any prevailing party, it would be the association, because NHK's claims were dismissed by the court.
Do I understand it right that the court dismissed the claims without prejudice on motions to dismiss, or dismiss with prejudice, based on motions to dismiss without prejudice?
No, there's discussions in December where NHK had offered to dismiss their claims without prejudice, and the association wouldn't allow it. If it was going to be without prejudice, we needed to be recoup our fees, otherwise needed to be with prejudice. So the claims so that did not settle. The court ultimately dismissed the claims with prejudice.
But I wasn't able to figure out what was the rule basis or procedural basis for the court's dismissal with prejudice.
I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure why the court dismissed it with prejudice. Other than that, I can assume NHK did not present any evidence in support of those claims, and I think the court found them to be meritless and just simply dropped them because it never came up.
So there wasn't a summary judgment motion or anything like that?
That's correct. There was no summary judgment motion.
What opportunity did the NHK have to present evidence?
Well,
there wasn't a hearing, there wasn't a motion for summary judgment, there wasn't a motion.
It started off in county court. NHK requests that it be moved to district court. When it got moved to district court, we got into some procedural issues where the court had a case management conference to discuss what was going on. As that played out, it apparently became apparent to the court that there was no evidence that was going to be presented in support of NHK's claims. But for whatever reason, it never got to summary judgment, it never even got to discovery. It just got dismissed. If I can hand over the rest of my time to Mr. Mills in Western States.
Good morning, Your Honor. Sherry Balkost again on behalf of Western States Property Service and Bill Mills. And Justice Berger, if I could have a moment, I'd like to answer your question about the court's authority to dismiss the case. contingent on non-payment of attorney's fees and costs. NHT actually filed a motion to dismiss, and in that motion she requested that her claims be dismissed. She did request them without prejudice at that time. There was some other motions to dismiss filed in the county court because there was some discussion about NHK just dismissing those claims and then just refiling again in the district court. And under Rule 41, I think it's either A or B, the court can put contingencies upon a motion to dismiss when the parties may have to litigate the case again. So there was some discussion about that going on. But when the motion to dismiss came in the district court, Phil Mills and Western States, during a SADS conference, told the court we would not contest that, but we would request that each party pay their own attorney's fees and costs. Therefore, that would end the litigation. We would be done, and the parties could walk away, and we wouldn't have to be here today. But ultimately, the court, I think, took the discretion under Rule 41 and implied some conditions upon the motion to dismiss, requiring each of the parties to pay their own attorney's fees and costs. And then going on with our argument, on March 4, 2013, the district court dismissed the property manager from the litigation. And again, that was based upon the motion that NHK brought before the court seeking dismissal. She was seeking some of her fees and costs at that time. Again, though, we did not contest that so long as each party just paid their own attorney's fees and costs. And that's what was ultimately done in the March 4, 2013 order. Therefore, at that particular point in time, Phil Mills and Western States thought that they were done with this litigation. However, there is the bill of costs that was filed by NHK, where it was seeking its costs, attorney's fees, jointly and severally then from Western States and the HOA. And due to that, Western States and Mills had to respond to that and had to address the issues brought in that particular motion, specifying why Phil Mills and Western States felt that they shouldn't have to be responsible for those fees and costs. And I think the court did take that into consideration, did some determination. And the record also states, during one of the status conferences, all the parties were invited to provide the judge with a list of any remaining issues that needed to be addressed. NHK did not provide any additional listing of issues or claims for the court to address. Therefore, I think it was fair and reasonable for the court to assume that any of these other issues had been resolved or were no longer issues. So therefore, that order of dismissal came in. The putative statutory offer settlement was never tendered upon some of the Western States. Therefore, the property manager couldn't respond. They didn't even know it existed until the bill of costs was filed and it was attached there too. And that was the first time they became aware of it.
Why did you brief the merits on the issue then?
Well, there was one issue, like I said, the bill of costs was issued and requested jointly and severally from Phil Mills, Western States, and the HOA. Therefore, we felt that if we didn't brief the issue, that there may be some arguments that our failure to brief the issue may have been that we weren't contesting it. There was one reference in the brief as well to Appalese. I did send NHK an email the day after we received the brief asking, is this appeal really towards us? Are you seeking relief from us? I did not get a response to that. So therefore, we felt it was appropriate that we go ahead and file our answer brief to the extent any of those issues were raised.
Is that in the record, that email?
It is not in the record because it was after the appeal was received. It was the day after. And I do have it available if anybody would like to see it. But based on that, we would ask that the court to affirm the district's court order denying the award of attorney's fees and costs as to Western States.
And is that the same reason why? I didn't understand at all why we're getting into the receiver issue. What was the basis for this?
It was raised in the appeal. Therefore, we just wanted to make it clear on the record that Western States and Phil Mills, we had no control over the receiver's actions. The receiver was truly an officer of the court and was required to conform with the order that was issued in the county court. And we just wanted to make it clear for this court that we had no direction or control over the receiver. That was the purpose of responding.
And then you got into the merits also, just as a precaution?
Yes, as a precaution, Your Honor, because it wasn't clear if the appeal was really directed towards us and precise if there were any portions of that that we needed to address. But we took the safe road and decided we might as well address each and every issue as well as the merits. Thank you.
Ms. Kazazian?
Just to respond to a couple of the issues raised by Appellee Western States. First of all, I don't recall getting an email. It would have been nice if counsel had followed up with a telephone call. With respect to her representation that Phil Mills and Western States didn't control the receiver, that's patently false. The transcript of the receiver hearing indicated that the receiver had a personal relationship with Mr. Mills and that Mr. Mills was directing his actions.
What relief are you seeking against Western States and Mr. Mills on this appeal?
On this appeal, just the right to proceed in the district court with the claims that were inappropriately dismissed with prejudice.
Well, counsel, you want to be able to proceed against them on the trial court on those.
That's correct.
Counsel, I want to interrupt you there. I just looked through the opening brief again. I don't see any argument about that. There's no argument that the order dismissing with prejudice was an error.
I believe there is in the reply brief.
Well, we don't address arguments raised in the reply brief for the first time.
Your Honor, I believe that the issue was raised in the opening brief.
Well, I'm looking at your conclusion from your opening brief and following up what Judge Jones says, I don't see anything asking that the judgment be reversed and remanded for further proceedings to allow you to pursue claims. It's not there.
Your Honors, if that is not in the opening brief, but it is in the reply brief, I would ask the court, given the circumstances of this case, to permit consideration of that issue. I understand that may not be the court's predisposition, but I would ask, given the situation here and there being no justification for the district court's dismissal with prejudice. With respect to the receiver, it is true that the receiver was supposed to follow the court's order, but it did not. The receiver was following the direction of Phil Mills, who is the acting secretary and basically de facto runs the board at this association. There was discovery that was requested in the district court. A subpoena was quashed, the receiver hearing only dealt with a couple of issues. There was no permission to deal with all of the issues despite the requests. I see that my time is up. I would ask the court to reverse the final order in all respects and award attorney's fees from this appeal to the appellant pursuant to Kiowa and on the appellant's or appellee's claims and 39.5. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case will stand submitted. Opinion will be issued in due course. Since that's the only case on our docket this morning, we'll be in recess. The bailiff may so announce.